Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod, Season 3, Episode 2. Thank you if you've emailed us and gotten to all of that stuff. We will come back to that, if not this week, next week, because we've got a special, longer interview than we normally get out of people this week. We've got a very special start of Doctor Who coming up
not
in a
just
moment.
Doctor Who, Broadchurch.
If this is the first time you've ever joined us, though, my name is Howell, this is Jamie,
yep.
And we do a podcast all about TV series, and really, it's not about one series, it's about as many as we can cover in our life. No spoilers, guaranteed. Giving you somewhere with good recommendations on what you should watch next and sharing the love of TV with stars on screen and behind the scenes. Here is a little highlights package, just a minute, from season one, covering people from Lord Richard Attenborough, which is apposite timing for Jurassic Park, the new Jurassic Park, to Al Gatto, the stuntman from Breaking Bad, star of Game of Thrones, came on, the location manager for Dexter, many other people, Luke Evans from The Hobbit, starting here with big TV star Jonathan Ross from the UK on Jeremy Clarkson's departure from Top Gear. Here's just a little highlights for you to encourage you to go back and listen to the other podcasts.
If you had a regular work setup and it's happened to work, you go, guys, come in here now. What's going on? What did you do that for? It's up to you now. Shall I get rid of him? Okay, you want to shake hands? Don't do it again. Get out there, you silly buggers, and carry on.
Matt Groening came in with the drawings of
really?
Marge with blue hair. We went, wow.
Whoa.
Who knew?
Were you like...
And Joey Kavanagh was on my show.
It was in an episode with Patrick Stewart.
Was he bald back then?
He was bald.
Is that your impression?
Hello, Benedict.
True, Jamie, absolutely true.
Yeah, it was Howell, though. That good point was
oh,
Howell.
Why didn't you announce yourself?
The episode, well, he's been in his underwear in a few of them, and just walk around in his underwear or other occasions.
When Stephen came to Norway to start shooting, he was like really struck by how well the actors were acting.
These guys can act.
An ultimate professional, really one of the top guys I've ever worked with.
Did he get sick of Ygritte saying, "You know nothing, Jon Snow"?
She kept practicing it in the car on the way to the set every morning. That's all she said. She had no conversation at all.
So I went to the studio and they said, "Do you want to see Bilbo's house? We're taking it down today. It's his final shot." And I was like, it was such a but it was just like the final scene in The Hobbit.
Did you then have to watch them rip it down?
And then they tore it down, yeah.
That's Luke Evans there talking about The Hobbit. It's quite a good body of work already, and that was just the first season. We're on season three now, so go back and listen to them. It's nice to have you with us. We also had Tim Jones from Chuck. He was the composer of Chuck, and he promised us a new theme tune instead of that one just then, which is mine. He hasn't sent it us yet. We need to get on him about that.
Oh, yeah.
But this week,
okay.
Doctor Who star, Arthur Darville. We're going to call him now.
Okay, this guy.
Got his phone number.
Got his phone number. Arthur Darville, Doctor Who guy and Broadchurch guy, and currently got a new TV show on the way.
Yeah, it's very exciting. So Who fans, stand by. Oh, we had Kai Owen from Torchwood on a couple of months ago as well. You want to listen to that? He was quite critical of Doctor Who as well.
Oh, yes.
Got us in trouble with some Torchwood fans, with some Doctor Who fans. Be interesting to see what Arthur makes of that. Arthur?
Hello?
Hello? Arthur, your signal's dreadful. Stick your head out a window.
Hello? Hello?
Oh, it's getting better.
Hello, I'm in the garden. I just slammed the cat in the face with the door as I energetically left.
Arthur, how are you doing?
Really well. How are you both?
Very good.
I'm quite a fan, so this is a good new venture.
Arthur, we thought that what with Barack Obama being on Mark Maron's podcast last week, it was time to get ourselves a big star for a change.
Well,
you know,
thanks.
When we couldn't find one, so we got you, Arthur. What a pleasure to meet you.
Well, and you. I've been listening to your work. It's very well done. It's very good.
Oh, that sounds.
Oh, there you go.
Which one have you listened to, Arthur?
I listened to. I'm really bad with watching stuff, so I don't really know what you're talking about. So maybe it's rubbish. But I listened to one of the ones with Fife that you had the other day, and some of the Madman.
Yes, Madman.
Madman.
That's what that's how Fife says it as well. I've been watching Madman.
Madman. I quite like. Yeah, Batman.
You're a very busy man, and we'll get onto that. But you presumably then, because when I was a theatre director, I'll mention that right at the top.
He always does this, Arthur. Wow. He has to mention
cards very early.
He got fired. Remember?
Get fired, Arthur. The play ended, and then I did something else. Point is, one of the reasons why I was excited about working in radio instead of theatre was that you miss all good TV when you work in theatre, don't you? You work in the evenings.
You work in the evening. Although now, I find it hard to unwind after doing a show. Like, I'm quite excitable. And I was doing a play. I was doing a play in New York for a while. And I wasn't. I couldn't really go. I quite like, you know, I couldn't go for a bit of a drink after the show and stuff because I had to sing so much, and I lose my voice really easily. I was like, oh, I can't actually just go out. So I did like
heroin
overnight Breaking Bad marathons.
Which
was great. So I'd do the show and then just watch Breaking Bad all night.
Oh, that's great.
Quite a fun existence.
That's great, because that's the problem, like touring actors and stuff. They're all cheating on their wives. They've all got drink problems because this is the problem. They come off stage at like 10:30 at night and they've got all this adrenaline, and everything's closed in every British town, and they just have nothing to do with their energy. And this seems to be a good addiction to develop.
I think it is. I think it probably is.
Were you happy with the Breaking Bad ending, Arthur?
I haven't watched the end, so I did it all right, and then I got really busy, just for, like on the last, but before the last four episodes, and then I kind of don't want it to end, so I still haven't watched them. That's 2 years ago. So in my mind, I'm just on a massive cliffhanger. I can't even remember what happened last. I'm going to have to go back and watch the last series again. But yeah, I got to just before the last four episodes.
So I like the fact that
everyone's fine.
We've got this rule on the Box Set Pod, which is the only rule, which is that in order to recommend something or in order to judge something, you have to watch four episodes of it before you can make a judgment, because style and, you know, you have to get into things properly.
Yeah,
I love that you flip that round. You're saying you will recommend something if you watch every episode apart from the last four.
Then it never ends.
Yeah,
in your mind, can live on.
Like, yes.
I've invented what happened. I imagine my imagination.
Well, this solves the problem with endings.
You know what? I think Breaking Bad, the ending is actually one of my favourite endings of a TV show. But then there's a mixed reaction.
Look.
I'm going to treat myself one point. If I've got like a, you know, if something bad happens, I'll go, oh, you know, I'll just treat myself to the end of Breaking Bad. That'll make me feel better. I'm saving it.
Yes. Hey, I meant to ask you, you went to Vegas recently, didn't you?
I did. For a convention.
I actually got married in Vegas last year, and Jamie got married this year. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a proper wedding. We went up in the mountains and we had 50 guests and all that, but it was such a good place to do it because it's so competitive. It was like an amazing Alpine Lodge wedding for about a tenth of what it would cost in Britain, I think. So it was
wow.
Nice. Arthur, well done for your career so far. It seems to be going well for you.
Thank you. It's going all right.
I have to make an admission straight up that I've hardly ever watched Doctor Who. I basically haven't watched anything that you've done. Jamie, on the other hand, has.
Watched it all twice.
Which means...
Wow, twice. Well done.
That you can have a normal conversation with me, slightly less than a normal conversation with Jamie. But I have been just thoroughly enjoying, since we got in touch with you, watching you sing, because I'm a musician as well. And
great.
Oh, my God, man. The music that's online from Once, which is a film I haven't seen as well, but the music from the musical. I mean, what an amazing... indie musical, that seems to me.
Well, I have a real problem with musicals, like especially I can sing a bit and whatever, but the idea of kind of being in a musical is just not my bag. But so when I got asked to audition for it, I started listening to music and was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Mm. It's like the songs are just brilliant. So it was one of the best things I've ever done in my life.
And how long were you doing that? Was it just New York?
No, I did it for 9 months in New York and then 2 months in London. It was great. It was really hard. It was hard singing that high every night.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And Glenn, who wrote the music, Glenn Hansard, he kind of popped in occasionally, and we did a gig with him in New York and stuff. It was great. I felt like a rock star for a while.
You performed at the Tony Awards as well, didn't you?
We did, yeah, at Radio City Music Hall.
Wow.
There were loads of moments where I just kind of pinched myself and went, "This is my life at the moment." That's a bit bonkers.
Exactly. And how old are you, Arthur?
I'm 33. I've just turned 33.
Oh, all right. Well, great. You're younger than me. That feels great.
About the same, though. I mean, 34. But I mean, you were you with your wife when you were doing the musical?
It was great.
Was it hard? Were you apart, or was she over there?
She was in London for a lot of it, and then she came over to New York quite a bit. And like we went on holiday a lot to New York really early on in our relationship, and it has like we have a real soft spot for it. Mm. So it was really nice to be able to spend some time over there together. It was really hard, like long distance to do stuff, but I think like. I was talking to a guy in a band yesterday, in Everything, who we went to see last night.
Great band.
Alex, who's the guitarist, and they go on tour and stuff, and you know they've all got partners, and I think you just, you know, it's the nature of what you do, and if you.
But it's hard. I imagine it's easier when you've been with someone for a while. Like I find it in the, you know, being newly married and stuff. I hate going away from my wife for a week at the moment. I am absolutely positive that in 10 years it'd be like, take me away for a month. Yeah. But it's hard.
Because I know, I think we're quite used to being, I think it's always like, I'm going off to Canada for a while in September.
Is that to film the Legends of Tomorrow?
Legends of Tomorrow.
Yes.
I still can't say it without doing that voice. So to do that. So that's going to be hard. But, you know, you just kind of deal with it. And I really enjoy a long-haul flight.
I do. I hate short-haul.
Short-haul's terrible. Why would you do it? It's like being pushed into a box.
It's awful.
I quite like a long flight. You get to watch films.
What's your favourite airline? I've got to go Virgin Atlantic. In fact, Virgin America is my favourite, but Virgin Atlantic.
What's the difference? Like Virgin have always been, they're always really nice. I think they're trained to be really nice. So I'm quite suspicious about it.
Only a British person could be that cynical about niceness, about good customer service.
I know, but I love it, but... I think what's the end game here?
What's the game here? You're trying to make me happy.
Yeah.
There's also, they're being all inventive with the in-flight safety videos now.
Well, they've made them funny as well, which after the first, like, because didn't Vic Reeves do the one on Virgin?
Yes, him and Morgana Robinson.
Yeah. which on the first, I've seen Vic, I'm a big Vic Reeves fan. I think he's brilliant. Yeah. But after three viewings, you know, they're back and then another flight. I mean, I can't stand it. You know, no one wants to see that over and over again.
Virgin
but that,
America.
I mean, that's like, oh, Jesus, I can't stand the in-flight safety.
First world problem.
Jesus.
I thought we were talking about planes here.
Yeah, Doctor Who fans are listening going, what the hell?
Let's cut to the chase here. We got Arthur here.
Okay.
This guy was a big part. You were a companion to Doctor Who. How did it begin? How did you get involved?
How did it
with
begin?
Doctor Who?
Well, I hadn't really watched it, which I think was a good thing. And I was mates with Matt. Me and Matt did a play together. In London called Swimming with Sharks, which was based on the film with Christian Slater and Helen Baxendale.
How was that? Did that go well?
Yeah, it was all right.
Slater a nightmare?
Do you know what? No, he wasn't. Yeah. He was a really nice bloke.
Yeah.
I watched Heathers just before.
What a film.
I know, but just before I started working with him, so I kind of had a bit of a. I didn't really talk to him, and we worked together for quite a long time. Like I was quite, I don't know. I've got better with this, but I used to be quite nervous.
So you'd go to the rehearsal room, and you wouldn't do a There'd be no chat. There'd be no. It would just be I'll stand in the corner and check my lines, and then.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. It was a pretty awkward job. But me and Matt kind of. Made firm friends on that.
So what you're saying is Matt got you the job.
Matt basically got me the job. Essentially. No, I just auditioned for it, and then I did an audition with Matt. And then, because he's kind of flash, he got a car from Cardiff to London, and he was like, do you want to get in the back of my car? I was like, yeah, that'd be great. And we sat and had a few beers in the car, and he was like, mate, you've definitely got the job. And I was like, I haven't got the job. And I didn't hear anything for about 2 months. I was like, well, I haven't got the job then. And I was doing my tax at my parents' house in Birmingham, surrounded by receipts. And then got the phone call saying I got the job.
And you went, I can afford an accountant.
In the air, if it was money. Scrooge McDuck.
Was the idea with your character in Doctor Who, because you were the fiancé to Karen Gillan's character, Amy Pond, was it just that you were a small part, but then they realised you were very good and they liked your interaction, so they made you a bigger part in the other series?
I like that story.
I like
it. Let's go with that one. I don't know. I see Stephen reckons that he had it planned out right from the beginning, but I think he says that just to make him sound even more clever than he is. So I don't know. I didn't really know. I thought I was going to be in it for about 5 episodes when I started. I didn't realise it would be 3 series of it. And because I was scared of being fired, I just didn't ask. So I just kept coming in to work, and they kept. I get a new script. If you haven't seen it, my character died quite a lot, but I always knew when I was coming back to life.
Yeah.
So I always knew that was happening. There was never.
It's nice. That's nice to know.
You know what? It's a great way to deal with spoilers, isn't it? If your character just dies a lot.
Mum, can you check if those receipts are on the carpet?
I think I might need them.
And when you go, because you've been around the world doing the conferences and stuff.
Yeah.
Like Vegas, I saw, was one of them, my favourite place. Mm. When the fans come up to you and talk to you...
I hated Vegas.
Oh, you're one of those. It's funny, I talk a lot about Vegas with people, and did you fly straight there from Britain?
No, we were in Calgary,
okay.
And then we went and went up to Banff and Lake Louise and walked around like mountains.
And then you landed in the dust bowl.
Paradise. And then we landed in a dust bowl, and everyone said, it's horrible here. Every person we met on the first day were people that lived in Vegas that didn't want to live in Vegas. And they scared us. So we sat in our hotel room for the first night and just watched documentaries about Vegas.
Oh, God. I'm not sure if that's the best way to enjoy Vegas. No, some people have I would say 10% of people have a really bad reaction to Vegas, but anyway, we could talk about that forever, but we won't. When you're at these conferences and fans come and talk to you, do you receive... obviously, you receive praise. What's the number one thing that they complain about? What difference do they want with Doctor Who, do you think?
Oh, that's a really good question.
Because they must. Sure, I imagine they do. I imagine everyone's got their theory.
There's so much. Like, I didn't really realise it when I started doing the job. They really care about it. I kind of thought there'd be a lot of like, oh, yeah, it's that guy from the telly. But actually, people are really enthusiastic. My kind of interaction with people who watch it has always been a really positive thing, which is good. Mm. I don't know what they want. I don't know what they want changed.
I'll tell you why I asked, because we had Kai Owen on from Torchwood. Kai, and he was quite critical of Doctor Who. He was quite critical of Stephen, and he was kind of saying that he thinks it's a bit too complex and that Stephen was or wasn't writing for the fans enough. I'm not sure which, probably writing not quite enough for the fans, writing for himself too much.
But then I think you have to write for yourself, and then I think obviously the responsibility to, you know, I'm not saying it's perfect, but obviously there's a responsibility to give people what they want, but I think there's more of a responsibility to give people what they don't know they want, or to make people angry, or to start a discussion. And I think what Doctor Who does so well is it's a really positive program, and is about trying to fix the universe rather than, you know, destroy it. I was talking to someone about this the other day about, because I've seemed to have kind of landed in doing kind of bits of, you know, quite a lot of like science fiction and kind of that kind of fantasy adventure stuff. And someone in an interview the other day said, "So why do you like doing it so much?" And I've really chosen to just do that genre. But what I like about it and what appeals to me about it is that it shows the kind of extremes of humanity, and it shows people trying to, you know, the stakes are always really high, and it shows you can explore what human beings can achieve, kind of facing kind of quite massive problems, and it's about people coming together. And I don't know, maybe that's me being really kind of...
No, I think you bang on, and
it's mushy about it. I
agree completely. I do a lot of reading about the Second World War and Hitler and stuff, and mainly because it strikes me that how recent it is, and I'm fascinated by people and what people can do, and how the world changed so quickly, how easy it was, really, for some thugs to almost take over the world and exterminate people. Oh, I didn't mean to say the word exterminate.
Howl.
I did not mean that. That was not... God. But that really interests me, and I always think we need to be very careful, as humanity needs to be very careful, because that line between those two worlds seems very thin. And... the reason I love, and this is the reason I should probably watch Doctor Who, because the reason I love watching Star Trek, and the Star Trek movies are on Netflix, and I'm sort of going through them, is because I never realised as a kid quite how metaphorical the whole thing is. That's the whole point of science fiction. And I would imagine that, I don't know enough, but I would imagine that science fiction came out of the effects of World War II particularly. I imagine that that's where it all began. Because you really suddenly felt that the nuances of the world that weren't that nuanced. Sometimes you can have genuine good versus evil, and what are these massive themes, and how do we deal with these massive themes? And what a wonderful thing to be able to be part of that. And yet, people, it's so easy to belittle, because it's people wearing bad makeup, or it's Hoovers wandering around a set. You know, so it seems like something that's so disposable, and yet it's one of the most philosophical things that we've got in popular culture.
Definitely, and I think Stephen really knows that, and I think he's a master of of doing that, and it's the stuff that he wants to explore as a writer. And you know, when he's at his best is when, and he is a genius as well, and he does make things overcomplicated, and I love that. And he challenges people, and people have to watch it again, and it's great. But fundamentally, he's writing about people trying to be the best that they can be. And for me, in it was really odd and amazing to get the chance to play a character who was ostensibly a really nice, good person. Which is quite a rarity.
I liked your character. I liked him as a guy.
He was fun, wasn't he?
He was like me. What I liked about it was that it was like, this is what I'd be like if I ended up with Doctor Who taking me around. He was like an ordinary Joe Bloggs kind of guy who just ends up sort of on this weird journey.
That was absolutely. I felt a responsibility to be like an outside eye, especially for the first series, until I got kind of sucked into the world of it. I think to be there to question how people would really question it, not in a kind of TV way, but in a like, what the hell is going on here? This is totally mad. I felt a real responsibility to be that person.
And like, you were part of an institute, a British institute. I mean, this is like,
I feel like Americans love Doctor Who more.
Doctor Who is massive in America, and like, it's like, James Bond or something. It's a huge thing.
I think that's happened only in the last few years, or maybe I think it's since the kind of advent of things like Netflix and the age of the science fiction convention as well is definitely upon us at the moment. But even from when we started, like we went, because BBC America have been really supportive, and they show it over there. But it's, you know, it's they're growing over there, but it gets quite big numbers.
It's huge. I mean, it's not that far behind Top Gear.
No, it's not. And like, just the response that, like, even just doing once over there, there seemed to be a real buzz about it, and people watched it. I'm always surprised when people.
We always ask people about pay, and then you can be as honest as you want. Do you get paid like when there's reruns and stuff? Are you on like a points thing, or do you just get paid a lump sum to do stuff?
I don't really know how it works. I think
you get a check in the post like 2 years later.
I think you get some residuals, but it depends on what you. I don't know. Some people do. Some people do. I do like. I get for BBC. I don't know how it works now, but yeah, you get bits of money here. I call it surprise money.
When you get a tax rebate.
It's not, you know, it's not loads, but it's I get a bit. I like getting really small. I mean, obviously, like getting big checks for things. I like getting really small checks for for residuals. Like I did a tiny, tiny part in a drama, like my first TV job, where I was a policeman who got shot in the face.
Nice.
In a thing called He Kills Coppers.
Nice.
And I occasionally get like a check for £1.25.
Love it. Interesting fact for you, Sting, he gets paid, he gets $2,000 a day from the royalties just from Every Breath You Take.
I'll be missing you.
Every Breath You Take, and I'll Be Missing You, the Puff Daddy version, because they didn't get rights off him. He gets all the money from Puff Daddy. And he gets all the money of his own. 2,000 a day, that is.
Wow.
That's only part of his, obviously, other stuff as well. So,
what about you, music-wise? Are you have you got aspirations to do albums? Maybe you and Fife Dangerfield could get together. In fact,
we did a bit together a while ago. Yeah. When he did his solo album, I played guitar for him occasionally when he did gigs, which was really fun.
Wow.
And that I really enjoy. You know, he knows this, but I really enjoyed doing that.
He's very talented, isn't he? He's got some talent.
We went to school together. And you kind of knock around. He was in a band called Senseless Prayer.
Nice.
I know, isn't that amazing?
That's so Fife.
But they were brilliant. We used to go and see them and knock around together. I was in a terrible, terrible band because I was a few years below Fife at school. And I think we were in like jazz band together for a little bit, But he's just brilliant, and I'm really glad that he's doing so well. I forgot what my point was.
It's not about the point.
We'd love to do something together at some point.
I mean, well, anyway. But your singing is excellent. I mean, you've got such a good voice.
You've got a good quality voice there.
And like you say, there's nothing wrong with musical theatre. Well, there's a lot wrong with some musicals, but you're as an actor musician, you are.
And there's lots more of that at the moment. There's lots more, you know, stuff going on for actor musos.
Yes, there is.
I'd like to. I don't know. Maybe I'll record an album and release it under a different name.
Well, if you
no
could
one will listen to
let's,
it,
let's have a listen, shall we?
Oh, God, no, don't.
I think if we use music in a podcast, technically it has to be a review. So Jamie and I now have to review this. that's Arthur Darvill performing Falling Slowly.
You're the high voice, yeah?
Yeah.
You're the one on the piano.
I am, yeah.
Can I talk
it's
to
just
you?
Just beautiful, Arthur.
Can
just...
I talk to you briefly, though? We have to talk about Broadchurch before we let you go, because that is one of the most massive TV shows in this country for a long time, and huge part of it.
See, how long you got, Arthur? This is going to be about 3 hours, this interview. not even dealt with this future one that you're doing. Yeah, Broadchurch.
So first of all, have you watched it yourself?
I don't really like watching things that I'm in, because I was talking to my best mate about this the other day, and I went to see him in a film, and he, so one of my best mates, I'm making this a long story, one of my best mates, Kian Barry, is a really good actor, and he's in this film, which I'm going to plug, actually.
Yeah.
It's called Nina Forever. And it's these directors called the Blaine Brothers, who it's a weird premise. It's about a guy who his girlfriend dies in a car accident, and he's obviously very depressed. And as soon as he starts having sex with another girl, his dead ex-girlfriend appears in the bed next to him, kind of all mangled, and every time they have sex, she's there, and they have this kind of weird three-way relationship, and she's kind of all covered in blood.
It's really weird, and I
had to see lots of Kian's arse on screen as well, which is just terrible, but it's a really, really good film. But he turned up half an hour late, really hungover, and watched it kind of through his fingers, because just watching himself was just, I was like, this is brilliant apart from your arse. And he was like, I can't watch it. And so normally I'm a bit like that. And especially when me, Matt and Karen watched the first episode of Doctor Who that we were in, we watched like a rough cut of it. We sat with, you know, behind cushions, not because we were scared of what was going on, but just because watching ourselves in it, it's a kind of weird brain, I don't know, it's never what you think you've done, or, you know, just, I don't know, just watching your own face is really hard, and listening to your own voice is really hard.
Oh, we get that a lot, people always say about the voice. And but in radio, there's this thing called the snoop. It's horrific. You listen back to yourself with bosses in the room.
God, and I imagine it's horrible.
They give you notes, you know, and it's horrific. But you do actually get used to the sound of your own voice after a while.
Yeah. I imagine you do.
Yeah, it's not an egotistical thing. What I mean is you get beyond the horribleness, and you actually begin to be able to gauge when you're being good and when you're being crap.
I can do it like with singing, because I suppose you have to listen back to like recordings and stuff. I can do it with that now, which is much easier. But talking, I can't bear the sound of my own voice. So anyway, so watching myself.
So Broadchurch. So you watched Broadchurch.
I watched it, and I knew what happened, but I was totally hooked. I'm so proud to be part of it. I think the writing is so spot on, and, you know, bar my own face, like everyone else's faces, and everyone else's performance is so brilliant.
Yeah,
I was totally hooked.
It's a brilliant. I'll tell you this right now, Arthur. I guessed the killer on the first episode, and you can ask my wife about that, because I tell her all the time. Yeah, it was amazing. Obviously, it was a long shot, but I guess that. I won't give away any spoilers, of course, but
Yeah.
Wow. What a, I mean, that first series especially was amazing.
Yeah.
There's a bit of backlash, wasn't there, for the second series, which I think was a bit harsh.
I think that, which was inevitable. Yeah. I think we kind of knew that when we were shooting it, and it's a different, you know, it's a different thing, the second series. And I think it very, very cleverly and very honestly tells the story after the first series. I think it's a really good piece of work, and it's a really, really good piece of writing.
I think it's a lot more of like a courtroom based thing, which is really fascinating, and I enjoyed it.
It was hard. That was quite hard to film because there was a lot of us, all of us, just sitting in a courtroom watching. I had food poisoning one day, which was horrible.
So you had the squits,
and my lady had been up the night before all night with food poisoning, so I'd been kind of like holding her hair back and telling her it'd be all right. So I had no sleep, and then I got to work and had to just sit in a hot courtroom all day, because they do a thing where. They do a thing where you don't really rehearse. They shoot the rehearsal, so they kind of get everyone's reactions straight. So my girlfriend just banged on the window and said, "You're being really loud." So I'm going to talk a bit quieter. I've got a very loud voice. She hates when I talk loud in the garden. That's nice.
It's not that loud. She's just embarrassed about the idea that the neighbours hear you talking about.
I know she is. She's living with me. I'm trying to laugh. Anyway, so I got in and it was really hot, and I didn't know how long this. It was straight after lunch, and all I could manage to get down with. This is a horrible story. All I managed to get down with was mushroom soup at lunchtime, and I had a bit of a nap, and I thought, I'll get through the rest of the day. It's just sitting there. I'd have to say it. And I was sitting next to Jodie Whittaker, and I said to her before the story started, I said, "Oh, I'm not feeling very good." And she was like, "Oh, you'll be fine, you'll be fine." And they call action, and Charlotte Rampling's talking, being brilliant. And I was right in the corner of the public gallery and had to get out. I would have had to walk past everyone. As soon as they said action, I was like, "Oh, no. I'm going to go. It's going to go." And it started coming up, and I was like, my eyes started watering, I started shaking. And I was like, "Oh God!" And I just went, and I was sick in my mouth. And Jodie just stood and went, "Oh God, you've been fucking sick!" And grabbed me, just threw me, and I just. You know, when you, like, my cheeks were puffed, I was like a puffer fish. I managed to get past everyone and then stood in the middle of shot and just threw up all over the court.
They should have left that in the show.
I don't know why it's not in there. It was brilliant. And then just stood there just stinking of sick with everyone looking at me. And I was kind of like, "Oh God, I'm so sorry.
You stood in the middle and vomed on camera.
Terrible. On camera, and then like Thunderbirds out of there. I was just like so. Oh, it was awful.
Arthur, I've got to get something straight. Okay, did they shout cut after you were sick?
Yeah, I think it's. I haven't seen it, but I think it's on camera. Because I've got. I really want to get. I'm trying to instate the BAFTA for the best performance in the back of shot.
Yeah.
I do a lot of shows where you just, you know, you're kind of mumbling, and I reckon that one would win if it got in.
I'm going to watch the whole of both series of Broadchurch now purely because I want to see you at the back of one of those shots
holding back the vom,
and there must be one.
I wish they did have that. And just did the classic Broadchurch slow-mo dramatic moment with you in the middle just hurling in the corner.
Arthur, you've got it. Have you watched that back? Has anyone shown you the outtake?
No one's shown it to me. No,
oh, you've got to ask.
Maybe they're a bit... But it's got to be somewhere because the cameras were definitely rolling. So,
oh, Arthur, you've got to ask, right? And if you get it, you've got to let us know and we'll do a special on it.
Let me ask you this, Arthur, about Broadchurch.
Yeah.
David Tennant, he got the role, the same role that he played in Broadchurch in the American version, Grace Point. He went for the audition and got the part as the American version. Did you consider going for the American version as well?
No, I didn't go up for the American version. No, I didn't. My manager, when it
when it came out that they were doing one, my manager said, "Oh, if you know, if it comes up, do you want to go up for it?" I was like, "Not, I don't know, not really. I don't know.
Good choice, Arnie.
Well, they got cancelled.
But like, so. I think it's a really good move from David, though. Like, I think to get him on, you know, and he's obviously doing really well in America now. So I think it was a good move.
Yeah, I agree. But quite, I think for secondary characters,
funny thing. I haven't watched it. I don't know. I think Anna, but by James, who directed it, directed the American one as well. So it was. I know it was a very odd experience for them. I think it was quite enjoy, you know, you get the chance, you often want the chance to, you know, you do a bit of work and you go, oh, I wish I could do that again.
Yeah.
And do it better. And like, I think
it was one of them.
There must have been an element of that for them.
Yeah.
I imagine it was a really odd, surreal.
Must have been weird.
I think you're being very polite, but I'm reading between the lines that it wasn't a particularly fantastic experience for them.
I don't know. I think they had a lot of fun doing it.
But it just wasn't up to the quality, perhaps the fastidiousness, the quality of the.
I think it's hard to adapt something, and especially when it doesn't really necessarily need adapting. They could.
This is it. I don't see the. I mean, you know, I don't want to insult anyone by saying it. I'm trying to be very diplomatic here, but I don't understand why they did it.
Yeah,
because it was quite big over, and I don't think that's me being. I genuinely don't understand why they'd want to remake it. Unless you're going to do something a bit different with it.
Yeah. There's a long history of idiotic decisions when it comes to Over the Atlantic, because it's like taking things over the Atlantic. You join a list of guests now on this podcast, including Lord Richard Attenborough, the late great Lord Richard Attenborough. Now, his brother, obviously, David Attenborough, I was reading his book about his life, and when they first took his nature documentaries over the Atlantic, they wanted to get rid of his voice. They said that the Americans wouldn't understand his voice.
He
really stood firm. He didn't really have the power to do it, but he stood really firm on it and said, under no circumstances. And I was thinking about that just before when we were talking about residuals and stuff, because he was very canny with all of that stuff early on.
Yeah.
And thank God he did, because his, you know, America, they didn't have a problem with his voice.
No, he's the voice of nature.
Yes.
I can't look at nature without hearing his voice.
No, exactly.
About Broadchurch, is there going to be a season 3 of Broadchurch, can I just ask?
Well, yeah, there is. I don't know what, because everyone's really busy. And I don't know what the plan is for. I don't even know if I'm in it, but I'd obviously, if I was around and they wanted me to do it, I'd jump at the chance. I'd work with Chris Chibnall on anything.
I think you should give up that hope. It was the moment that you puked all over everybody.
I know. They're like, oh no, we can't trust him. Not him. If he's going to be spewing McGee over the whole
So Canada.
It stank of mushroom soup for the rest of the day. Apparently, I went home.
They must have hated you. I bet they had to hose the set down.
You've just been doing something. What's the thing that you've just been doing? Legends of Tomorrow. Is that
Legends of Tomorrow? Yeah. So I haven't started shooting it yet. We shot a trailer for it.
Right.
And which is exciting. And I start shooting. I don't even know when I start shooting. I think I'm waiting for that call.
And is that Vancouver or?
Yeah,
because you're joining another list, the X-Files, amongst other things. That, you know, Canada's, I think Vancouver's the place, because you can get a bit of any, you can get the snow, the sunshine, the
yeah, you can get every weather, and everyone's really suspiciously nice.
Yeah.
And this series, Legends of Tomorrow, it's DC Comics kind of trying to take on the TV show, the Marvel TV universe now, isn't it? With their own sort of world of, and they've already got shows like Flash and The Arrow, which are very successful, and they're going to be part of this world, I imagine, of Legends of Tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah, they are. But the guys who are the producers, Mark and Andrew and Greg, it's a bit like talking to Stephen about stuff. They're so knowledgeable and enthusiastic about the comics and about the world, but also want to do their own thing. And I think they've
I think they've worked through a few. I think, and now those shows are really good. I haven't really watched much of Arrow yet, but the Flash certainly is really good. I think the writing in it's good, and I think it's only getting better. And they called me up and kind of told me the premise of this thing, which I'm not really allowed to talk about because it's all secret, but yeah. It sounds great. Like it's a really exciting, I'm really excited to be part of it and to be part of a kind of, I like DC Comics because they seem to be kind of more of the underdog, and they've got all these superheroes that are a bit, they haven't quite worked themselves out yet. They're not like just, obviously they've got Superman and Batman who are great, but they've got these other people who are still kind of working out what their things are. I don't know. I quite like them as a universe. I've only just kind of started delving into and reading the comics, but it's quite good. I get to sit at home and just read comics and call it work. But the character I get to play is just really, it's a really fun character.
Can you tell us who it is?
It's another time traveler, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's this guy called Rip Hunter, which is hilarious. He's a time traveler and he's come from the future because he's seen like something terrible happening, and he's saving the world and getting a group of heroes together. It's kind of like a childhood dream come true, really, to play a kind of a type of superhero.
Is this going to be on Netflix or is it?
I don't know.
It's
on CW in America. So it's Warner Brothers. I don't know. I don't know how it works. I don't know.
We'll see. I've got a little tip for you with your character, though, Rip Turner. Why don't you, every time he travels in time, when he arrives somewhere, he hurls.
That's a really good idea.
Mushroom soup.
Everyone just goes, can you smell mushroom soup? He's managed to hide it really well.
Right, but listen, Arthur, we've held you for long enough. What one thing, I want you to tell us one thing on here, right, that you have never said at a conference, you've never said in an interview, something about Doctor Who and or Broadchurch, right, something that happened, that, let's see if we can get the juices flowing, something that somebody once did backstage, maybe Matt Smith just did a fart just before a really famous shot. Think of a really famous moment. I like to turn it round. I'm always aware that there are, because we cover all different TV series, there's always going to be fans listening to this who want to ask you so much more than we could even think of asking you. So give me an answer that a fan would really love to a question that I haven't asked.
Do our job for us now.
I think that's the worst question I've ever been asked.
I think you find it wasn't a question.
I was just going to make some mushroom soup. You've never said to anyone else. I quite like talking, so I think I've told most of the. I've got a terrible memory, and I only remember things by talking about them or photographs. I can't remember what.
Okay, let me.
Did anyone ever do a nasty Trump in the TARDIS?
Always, it was started really started. We all just threw up everywhere and threw it at each other, and then acted, and everyone was farting all the time.
What would be the first drink that you bought Matt Smith if you went to the pub after filming? What's his choice of drink?
A pint of lager. It's really exhausting.
So it was going to be a pina colada or something. God.
I saw Matt the other day. We went to see the Strokes, but we saw each other across the field and waved at each other. That's not really a story.
That's a great story. That's the information I was looking for. I waved at each other across a field.
Yeah.
Beat that Comic-Con. You don't get that information there.
Just because it was one of the best days of my life, we went and did a Comic-Con. I'm just taking up all that. I'm taking the whole podcast.
No, you are. It's fine. That's the point.
We went to do a convention in Toronto. I got there and Matt was like, I met Arcade Fire's manager last night and they've invited us on stage tonight if you want to. And I'm a massive Arcade Fire fan, and as is he. So we went and watched at the side of the stage, and then in their encore, they dressed us up in these big heads, like paper mache heads and sparkly suits. And we got to go and dance on stage. And it was amazing. And someone videoed it on YouTube. And sometimes if I'm feeling a bit down, I just YouTube it and watch myself dancing on stage with Arcade Fire and go, that definitely happened. You can't see my face or anything. You can't tell it's me or him, but we're having a really good time.
Have you ever tweeted that?
I think I might have. So I think people know that.
Let's say you haven't. And yeah. When you tweet about this box set, I want you to put a link to this and a link to that in the same thing. Okay?
I'll find the video. Great.
Great. Arthur,
thank you so much.
What a pleasure.
Thank you.
Total pleasure.
Why don't you come on again, right, when you're in Canada, because you're going to have hours of boredom and stuff.
We'll find
a time when you're on FaceTime, when you're on Wi-Fi, right, and we will get you on in top quality, better quality than now you're in Britain. We'll get you on, and you can give us like a live on-set experience.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
Would you?
I'll give you... Yeah, definitely. It's a date.
Let's do it. And try and grab the ex-Superman, Brandon Roth, is
Brandon
it?
Brandon Routh.
Routh.
Oh, Routh.
Yeah.
Who is in Chuck?
Who is in Chuck? Yeah. Howell loves Chuck.
With my mate Zach.
Oh, what?
Are you friends with Zach?
Hold on a minute.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Are you friends with Zach?
Right, the podcast has just begun.
Levi, yeah.
Right, we'll just cut everything else. No. Let's start the podcast now. Welcome to the podcast, Arthur Darvill, friend of Zachary Levi. How the hell do you know Zach?
Well, mate, we did...
Of course you do his conferences.
Yeah, so we did his thing at Comic-Con in San Diego. And then when I was doing once in New York, he was also doing a play in New York, and we just hung out.
Wow.
And I went to games. I landed in Los Angeles last year for a weekend. Mm-hmm. And he phoned me and went, dude, I got games night at my house. I got games night. So I was like, games. Oh, I don't know. I'm a bit tired. I don't bother. And then I was like, no, I should go. I thought it'd just be like, oh, you know, everyone's kind of playing Monopoly and, you know, and whatever. And there were like 50 people running around his house playing like running charades. And then we played Mafia, and it was proper how American games night in some kind of like American Pie movie, but without the... Not like America, but in some kind of teen American movie would be like. It was great.
He got more energy than you and Matt Smith? Where would you place the three of you in energy scales? Because surely Matt Smith's at the top.
I once went bowling with Zach, and I watched him absolutely hammered lob a bowling ball from the seat of the bowling alley like a shot put over his shoulder and get a strike.
No!
Come on.
And have you watched Tangled?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it when I was watching Chuck. I was on like the second series of Chuck, and then I put the two together, and I love that. I mean, I think the music in that is just brilliant. It's one of the best underrated Disney films, I think.
He's really funny. I think he's such a good actor. He's so funny. When my sister met him, she was so, totally in love with him because he was the voice in Tangled.
Yeah.
I love that as a thing. Yeah.
What a guy.
That's great.
You've got a number of people to get on our pods when you're over there.
So who do you think you can you get us? Can you get Zachary Levi down the phone? Or do you
I'm,
think
not your, like, I'm not your booking agent.
Yes, you are now. I don't think you understand. Okay. You've been a guest now. That instantly makes you our booking agent.
We always try and get something out of a guest.
No worries. I'll get everyone. The whole of Canada.
Yes. Honestly, if we could get Zachary Levi.
I might try and get you a real Canadian Mountie.
Now that'd be good. All right, I'll take that. And we can talk about Due South.
Yeah.
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 All right, good. Do you know what Due South is? You don't do?
No.
All right, okay.
That was a good show.
I just said yes to be polite.
It was a BBC One show in the 90s about a bounty. You will remember the opening credits.
Not a bounty.
A Mountie with...
A Mountie with a
white wolf dog that ran around with him.
That sounds awful.
Oh,
it was better than you'd think. Great. I mean, Howell's made it sound awful, but it had its moments.
It's great.
I'll give it that.
BBC One.
Anyway, we've got put a man on a horse, he's got a dog. He wears rest.
Darvill, What a pleasure.
Let you go. We're going to send you a tranquilizer gun in the post, okay? So you use it to shoot down any celebrities that you might be able to.
Yeah, that'd be great. And
that would be awesome if you. But have fun. And thank you very much for
You're
being
really
part
welcome.
Of the pod.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I also, we'll put you into the prize draw for this season of the Box Set Pod to win the box set of
Entourage.
Entourage. I think we should do that. I think we should put all the guests in the prize draw as well. I mean, just because they're famous doesn't mean that they don't deserve free box sets.
Very good point. No discrimination.
There you go.
Love a bit of free stuff.
There you go, Arthur. Okay. Something to watch in Toronto. Have a lovely day.
Thank you, and you.
Keep up the good work and the singing especially, which is beautiful.
I'm going to go and do it now. I'm going to sing, be really loud in my house, annoy everyone. great.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thanks, guys. Bye.
There he goes. Arthur Darver, what a nice guy.
What a chatter.
What a chatter. He doesn't know. I mean, I've got his email and his phone number. How many times do you think I'm going to be asking him for...
He doesn't know what he's got himself
Zachary
into.
Levi.
Yeah, there was a good reason why when we talked to Jonathan Ross once, he never gave you his phone number.
Never gave me his phone number.
You gave him his. I mean, you gave him yours, but... Yeah.
Sorry, Arthur, you made a big mistake, my friend.
Yeah, we will be in touch.
Because you are now my friend.
I think he's a very nice guy, and I like him. And
so do I.
I think he's actually very good as well in the stuff he's been in.
So listen, if you've got any more questions for Arthur Darville and any comments on the Box Set Pod, you can email them to us, studio@theboxsetpod.com. I'll forward them on to him. You know, if I get a few questions that we've missed, I'll always forward them on to him, or we'll ask him next time he comes up. So studio@theboxsetpod.com. Get him in, pop us an email, and we always read every email. studio@theboxsetpod.com. See you next week on the Box Set Pod.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.